degrees Racine, 59 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's all music for today's program. In part one, we introduce you to the marvelous Fresh Ink Music Workshop and Festival going on at UW Parkside. In part two, you'll hear about Kenosha Unified's splendid productions of 1776 and West Side Story, which are about to be remounted, and about a special fundraising event that is coming up this Friday night. Stay with us. That fascinating music is by John Zorn. It's a piece called The Temptations of St. Anthony, and the marvelous musicians playing it are the members of the Fifth House Ensemble. And we have had the pleasure on several different occasions of talking with Melissa Snoza, who is the executive director of Fifth House Ensemble and their flutist. And she is with us again today on the morning show in part one of today's program to talk about the latest incarnation of one of Fifth House's most exciting projects, known as Fresh Ink, in which they bring to the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside an array of incredibly talented young musicians for a series of workshops and masterclasses and performances. And some of those performances are right here in the community in various venues. And it is an exciting experience for these young musicians and for anybody fortunate enough to take in any of these performances. And we'll spend a little time as well talking about Fifth House Ensemble itself. Such a distinctive, noteworthy ensemble doing such innovative, groundbreaking work in the field of music. Melissa Snows, it's great to have you back on the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to be back here in Kenosha.
So remind our listeners about kind of the long picture history of Fifth House Ensemble. How long have you been around, and what was sort of the impetus for the group being created?
Absolutely. Well, we have been around for 11 years now, which is really exciting for me to be able to say. I'm a founding member of the group and its executive director. And we formed with the idea of collaboration being central to everything that we do. So at this point, that means that we're creating concert experiences with video game musicians, with graphic novelists, with actors, with dancers. And also with partners who are completely outside of the field of music. So we might be doing performances that feature partnerships with workers' rights organizations from all over the country. We might also be doing a concert with the ACLU. There are a lot of different partners that we have that are inside and outside of the field of music and inside and out of the arts in general. We also do a lot of work with education. So for all 11 years, we've been committed to doing both performances and residencies in public schools, grades K through 12. And we've also extended that into social service organizations serving homeless and incarcerated youth and adults as of the last couple of years, which has been really fulfilling work to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Explain who comprises Fifth House Ensemble, and when you perform, is it always the same group of musicians collaborating?
We have 10 instrumentalists in our core roster. So it's a woodwind quintet and also one of each string and a piano. So that creates a lot of different possibilities in terms of what we can do on the stage. Everything from the full decktet to duos, trios, quartets, and everywhere in between. And we also on our roster have a composer who is also our director of artistic programming, whose name is Dan Visconti. And he, in addition to having us play some of his wonderful music, his main role is to help to set the artistic direction for the group and set our major programs.
Explain some of the intriguing places in which you have performed.
Oh, man. We have performed so many places that you would or would not expect chamber music to be. Everywhere from train stations to restaurants to museums. We're really excited to open up new venues to chamber music and to music of every kind. So one of the things that we've been excited to do in Chicago is to be able to be the first to bring music to a particular space and then watch other groups follow, which has been really fun.
And we should probably not waste any more time in talking about this especially exciting venture called Fresh Ink, which is happening, of course, right now. When was Fresh Ink first begun?
We first started in 2012, so this is actually our sixth summer doing this.
Wow, time flies. And although I tried to summarize it, I think you can probably say even better than I can, really the sort of the focus of it and the scope of it.
Absolutely. We invite young performers and composers up to age 32 to join us for 2 weeks in which we will premiere 16 new works of chamber music. We'll also perform 11 concerts in 14 days. So everything from, you know, performing for young children at the YMCA to the Milwaukee Art Museum, which is happening today, to concert spaces throughout Kenosha and Racine and also Chicago and Milwaukee.
So before you begin, I mean, I know you all arrived this past Sunday. Were these pieces of music already composed, or are they, at least in some instances, still under construction, so to speak?
I think the answer to that is yes, both. And the idea is that we have 16 composers who are joining us, and they have written their scores. They were turned in about a month before the festival began. But the point of this festival is to extend that spirit of collaboration into this two-week experience. So we do have composers and performers in the same room together rehearsing and workshopping pieces, which means often there will be changes that get made or suggestions that get made back and forth. And that's a beautiful thing for both sides, because frankly, when you're a young composer, to have really fine musicians working with you on a piece collaboratively instead of just sending it off and hoping everything goes well is a wonderful thing. And also for performers to be able to have the advantage of working with a composer who is still alive, who you can ask questions of, is a really rare and beautiful experience as well. So we're excited to be able to bring that to all levels of our participants. And at the same time, we're working together on a full entrepreneurship curriculum. So they're in the rehearsal room, but they're also engaging in workshops with us on everything from how to start an arts organization to how to program educational concerts, how to fundraise, how to market, and then some really fun things in between, like how to improvise bluegrass solos. We actually have a bluegrass band coming up to join us tomorrow, which will be really fun.
Wow. So where do these visitors, generally speaking, come from? And remind me again how many we're talking about.
Sure. We generally have about 35 to 40 participants a year, and they come from all over the world, frankly. We've had people come from as far away as London. We've had folks from Brazil. And this year we have a fair number of people from Canada, as it turns out. But they come from the nation's top music schools as well. So Cleveland Institute of Music, Juilliard, Eastman, a bunch of different schools represented this year and in previous years. And it's been really fun to make connections to those institutions via our alumni as well.
And I should think that by this point, Fresh Ink is starting to gain a reputation where the news is out there, and I suspect there are more and more young musicians clamoring for this opportunity.
It's been great. I mean, it's a really different kind of festival from the perspective that we are learning together as opposed to being coached from the outside. So the chamber music groups that you'll hear involve both participants and members of Fifth House together in the same group. And that's a model that has been around for some time. But the thing that's really exciting about this festival is that we're really invested in helping each of our participants forge their own authentic life in music, whatever that may look like. And what's really exciting to us, speaking of people wanting to come back, this year we have five students who are on the 2.0 track, which means that they're coming back for the second year. And what that means is that instead of going through the typical slate of workshops, they can do those again if they want to, as there are some that repeat every year. But instead of that, they actually get pulled into individual sessions with our faculty members to help them to incubate a specific project that they're working on. So this could be a chamber ensemble they're working on, a recording project. It could be an educational endeavor. We've had 2.0 projects that have been incredibly successful in past seasons, and it's really fun for the rest of the festival to see how this incredible wealth of information can be applied in a very practical way when these folks present their work at the end of the 2 weeks.
So how many different pieces of music are we talking about that get explored and incubated and ultimately hatched in, for instance, this year's Fresh Ink event?
So every year, each composer writes one new piece. So we have 16 composers. That means 16 new pieces added to the repertoire this year. And in addition to that, we have probably about twice as many pieces that are existing works by living composers and also classic works that are explored during the festival, either just for rehearsal purposes or to be performed at some of the 11 concerts that we have. So, you know, it's a fun opportunity for us to both workshop new music that's just been written and also explore some things that are already in the canon.
Tell us why this happens at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside.
You know, one of the things that's great about being here in Kenosha is that it's a little bit removed from the bustle of Chicago and Milwaukee, but it's right in between that corridor. So we're able to both be in a peaceful place that's, you know, a little bit secluded, that gives us the focus that we want to do. We also are really excited about serving the communities of Kenosha and Racine because there are a lot of really great venues here, both educational and concert venues. And then also to have access to Milwaukee and Chicago to be able to do performances in places like the Milwaukee Art Museum or Nichols Concert Hall in Evanston. So we're able to provide as many different kinds of performance experiences for artists and audiences alike during these 2 weeks.
Very good. I'm trying to remember 6 years ago. I mean, I emceed the dedication of the Rita, but I can't remember now exactly when that was. When you started 6 years ago, it's always been at Parkside, right?
It actually started at Carthage for one year, and then we switched over.
And then was the Rita, this beautiful facility there, already in place?
It was. I think it was about a year and a half old or something like that when we came in.
Okay. So I should think that that is one thing that makes this especially wonderful for you, is that it's an especially beautiful facility with a lot of spaces, I should think, that work really well for you.
You're not kidding. We have been incredibly grateful to be at Parkside. And, you know, the Rita is an incredible place, not only because it's visually beautiful, but because it sounds great in there. And one of the most valuable things to composers who come to the festival is the opportunity to walk away with beautiful recordings of their pieces. And so we tend to choose our final performance locations based on how good they sound for recording purposes. Uh-huh. So the Rita is a really wonderful place, and Bedford Concert Hall within it, a gorgeous gem.
It really is incredible, isn't it? So you are underway right now. You were saying that everybody arrived back on Sunday the 4th, but you really got to work on Monday the 5th.
Absolutely. Sunday the 4th is a getting to know you and eat as many s'mores as possible day, which we find to be incredibly important over the course of the festival. But everything really hit the ground yesterday. So we started with some workshops in the morning. We also had a faculty salon concert because we wouldn't expect our participants to do anything we wouldn't do. And we begin with the Milwaukee Art Museum today and a slate of rehearsals and workshops on public speaking as well.
Very good. Let's take just a brief break and hear a little more from Fifth House Ensemble. And, of course, it is under their auspices that this exciting event takes place called Fresh Ink. I want to play the opening movement, a portion of it, of Stacey Garup's piece called Frammenti. Can you just say a quick word about this music?
Absolutely. Frammenti is a wonderful piece in which she takes a bunch of little fragments and puts them together. So it's a piece that's in very small movements. And she wrote it originally for a large ensemble to be performed without a conductor. And so in order for her to do that, she employed the buddy system. So when you hear this, you're going to hear that often musicians are working in pairs. So I'm often playing with the oboe, or there are two different pairs of musicians working together to help us practically stay in the same spot.
Very good. Here's a little bit of Frammenti by Stacey Garup. Music of Stacey Garup from her piece called Frammenti, and those are the brilliantly talented musicians of the Fifth House Ensemble performing there. What's it like, Melissa Snoza, to be side-by-side with musicians that are not part of Fifth House? And I ask that because, you know, those of you who play together and have played together for years and years and years, of course, there's a special rapport and chemistry. It must be kind of an interesting experience to suddenly be sitting next to somebody who, at least in that moment, relatively speaking at least, as a stranger with whom you have not played for years and years and years. What is that experience like? I mean, I can sort of imagine what it's like for them. What's it like for you in Fifth House?
You know, I can tell you honestly that this 2 weeks is our favorite 2 weeks out of the year because of that very reason. Because one of the things that's really exciting is to watch our participants get brought into the fold, brought into our family, both in terms of the rehearsal process, the way we think, the way we conceive of projects, the way we collaborate. So they're watching us do that with one another. They're experiencing that in the rehearsal room. They're also seeing us work with our favorite collaborators who come to campus or join us via Skype for workshops. So, you know, by the end of the 2 weeks, what we've built, and over the last 6 years, I should say, is a creative community of people who are out there doing really wonderful things. And one of the things that I love watching is that over the course of the following 12 months and the following few years, we tend to collaborate with people who have participated in the festival many times. We've been in a position to visit their universities for residencies. We have hired them to do composing and arranging projects. There are a lot of different things that have happened. And we also watch them do projects with one another. So there are composers who, you know, write pieces for ensembles or individuals who have come to the festival. They travel to each other's colleges to perform. I mean, it's really exciting to watch. So it's our favorite, to be honest with you. It's really great to bring people into the fold, and it's something we love to do.
Evidently. So there are all kinds of performances that are coming up that people should keep in mind? I mean, that is public performances at various venues, most of which are happening right here in Kenosha or Racine, beginning with Friday evening at the Golden Rondell in Racine. Anything special about that concert you want to say?
What's exciting about that is you'll get to hear some of our instrumentalists performing either in solos or small ensembles. And, you know, they're bringing pieces to the festival that they had prepared before. So it's a great way to get to know them individually. And each of them gives a little spoken introduction as to who they are and what they're performing. And it's just a great way to get to know our participants.
Cool. Why don't you talk us through the rest of the schedule in terms of public performances?
Absolutely. So we'll have a public performance at the Racine Public Library on June 14th, which is Wednesday at 1 o'clock. So go ahead and bring your kids because that one's going to be interactive. And I actually missed one, which is really important. We will be at the Hobnob on June 13th. Which is going to be really fun, 7:30 p.m. That's going to be a special salon concert, and it's going to be a fun time. We've never performed there, but we've eaten there many times, so we're really excited. And our horn player has a lot of family in the Kenosha and Racine areas, and I know that that's a very special place for them, so we're really excited to be back. And then the Family YMCA in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, we will be there on June 15th performing for kids in their summer program at 9:30. And we will be at the Kenosha Public Library on June 15th at 7 p.m., which would be a really fun time for us to be able to play a variety of different, again, solo and smaller ensemble pieces. And then our final two concerts take place at Nichols Concert Hall in Evanston, Illinois, for it's at 7 o'clock on June 17th. And you'll hear half of the pieces that are written for the festival premiered there. The other half will be premiered here at Bedford Hall at the University of Wisconsin Parkside at 2 o'clock on June 18th, which is Sunday and also Father's Day. So if you need a fun activity for that afternoon, we're happy to provide. There will also be a great reception afterwards with you know, food, wine, all of that good stuff.
Wonderful. So lots of different opportunities for people to take in these interesting performances. And you can go to the website of Fifth House Ensemble to see this full schedule. What is the website address?
Sure. It's freshinkfestival.com. And ink is spelled I-N-C. And we're excited also to be able to thank our sponsors for this event. We've been fortunate to work with the Kenosha Community Foundation and the Racine Community Foundation for many years now. And that's another one of the reasons we're really excited to be in this area.
Excellent. I have a couple minutes left where I can give you a chance to talk about one of the projects that you're very excited about, the residency you've done with some social service organizations in Chicago. And Loyola University evidently has taken a great interest in what you're doing.
Yes. So we've been in partnership with Loyola University. This is our second year now. We partner with their Center for Urban Research and Learning, which does collaborative research with community-based organizations throughout the city on a variety of issues. And we have been working with three different social service organizations to provide anywhere from 10 to 16 week residencies every year. So we're working with Deborah's Place, which serves women experiencing homelessness. We're also working with Teen Living Programs, which serves teens and young adults experiencing homelessness, and also with the Chicago Temporary Youth Detention Center. We've been at the detention center for about 3 years now, so that's our longest standing of the three. And the researchers from Loyola have been coming with us to each of our residency visits. It's been an incredible opportunity for us to have some outside eyes on what we're doing. And they've just released their first year report of what they found in terms of being able to help us to identify what's happening in those visits, not just what we're teaching, but what kinds of long-term changes we're starting to see in our participants, and also helping us to develop documentation and evaluation tools, which other artists in the field can use to develop similar projects moving forward. So the things they told us about ourselves were really neat. I mean, they were able to say that no matter what we were teaching, what the subject matter was or what the setting was, that we were promoting things like agency, empowerment, mindfulness, collective decision-making, and creativity. And when they talk about creativity, it's not just being able to make art, it's being able to envision a better world for yourself, which if you can imagine, for a lot of the people who are in the circumstances that are similar to what our participants are experiencing, that's a really powerful thing.
Right. that means everything, giving them hope. Well, this is terrific. It's great to hear about all the wonderful things that Fifth House Ensemble is continuing to do. And, of course, we want to remind all of our listeners about all of these different opportunities to take in the excitement of Fresh Ink with various performances in and around both Kenosha and Racine. Melissa Snoza, the executive director of the Fifth House Ensemble, thank you so much for being here, and best wishes to you and everybody participating in this year's Fresh Ink Festival.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Time is 8:35. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. And here is part two of today's program. And to finish out today's morning show, I am joined in the studios by four people who are very, very busy right now in the process of mounting, or I should say remounting, two exciting musical theater productions here in Kenosha, West Side Story and 1776. And maybe you were lucky enough to see these productions the first time around when they came up in the busy season of musical theater here in Kenosha Unified. But otherwise, both of these productions are being remounted and re-performed on June 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th, just ahead of a very exciting trip to Nebraska for a really extraordinary event that draws talented musical theater students from all across the country. So we have with us in the studios Holly Stanfield, who oversees the musical theater program here at in Kenosha, and three talented students, all of whom happen to be part of the cast of 1776, Noah Olson, Sage Holloway, and Reagan Beam. And they are also all participating in a special fundraising event, which is this Friday night, Broadway night at Bradford High School at 7:30 p.m. So we have a lot to talk about, and we welcome all four of you to the morning show.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Holly, it's great to catch up with you. And first of all, this is the end of a busy year and a busy season. Through the course of this school year, what was performed in musical theater?
Oh, my. Quite a bit, actually. KUSD is a unified program. So let me see if I can get it all right. You're asking an old woman now. So I believe that the first thing we performed would be West Side Story School Edition. I believe that the next thing that went up probably was a Tremper, and Reagan was in that. And I believe was the Spitfire Grill. Mm. I think after that we had the Pirates of Penzance at Indian Trail Academy, and then 1776 at Bradford High School. And then Hello Dolly at Indian Trail High School. And then I believe we closed the season with The Hunchback of Notre Dame at Bradford. Mm-hmm.
And that's a typical year, right? I mean, that's this.
Maybe even one less than usual. Yeah, that's a pretty typical year.
Yeah, so it keeps everybody busy. You aren't directing, I don't think, all of those productions.
No, I was involved with the direction of West Side Story School Edition. I co-directed 1776 with Sherry Steinkellner, who is a Broadway writer. She wrote the book To Sister Act with her husband. And then I also worked on The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Hmm. I saw that. That was spectacular. I saw several of the productions, and all done at a very, very high level. Let's talk to our three students who are in the studios, and all part of 1776, and maybe part of other things as well through the season. Just say a word about why it is important for you to do this kind of work on top of all the other things that keep you busy. What draws you to want to devote the time and the energy that it takes to sing major roles in these kind of first-class productions? Here's Noah.
I think that being a part of, musical theater and everything, I personally very much enjoy music in general. So that's a good part of it. But the other part of it is telling a story. And, you know, there's always meanings to stories being written. And, you know, since you're little, you know, you have, like, Aesop's fables, and there's always a moral of a story and everything, and sometimes there's a message that, you know, people want to hear. And, you know, for 1776, for example, I think it's, you know, really good, especially in today's political climate, to be able to, you know, see the founding fathers and, you know, what this country was formed to be and everything.
Mm. Well put.
It's really meaningful.
Yeah.
For me, I've thought about this a lot because my senior year, you know, it's really surreal, and you think about everything that you've kind of done your whole 4 years of high school. And to me, life is crazy and ridiculous and messy, and theater helps me make sense of all of it. And I think that that's kind of what it is for everyone, whether or not we realize it. Just because, I mean, theater is crazy and messy as well because there's so much happening at all times, but it's just kind of a series of problem solving, and you kind of understand how life is kind of like theater. Like, you're just problem solving constantly to figure out what you're going to do next. So it's kind of kept me sane in high school.
So in a sense, it's exactly because you're busy that you want to be part of this. It helps make it all right.
Mm-hmm.
Well put. Reagan, do you have a thought to add?
Yeah. I guess what drew me to theater at first was my interest in music. I really love music too, just like Noah actually. And I guess musical theater allowed me an outlet where I could express my talents and show my talents to other people, but also kind of do it in a school setting and in a school environment without having to put myself in a more difficult and awkward position.
Mm. I think I know what you mean. I'm reminded of something Andrew Dorst said he had to deliver the commencement speech for his high school graduation, and he said something about, he was speaking about choir specifically, but he was talking about how it was, you know, in this day and age, it's one of the most wonderful feelings in the world to have this place to go and this group of people to be with where you feel safe and loved and valued. And in a sense, you know, you're talking about being in productions that are done at a very high level, I mean nearly professional level, and yet under the loving auspices of the watchful eye of teachers that really care about you in a way that out in the world is not always the case. Is that fair to say, Holly? I mean I think the world out there is a little bit different from what's created here. I mean, not in terms of quality, but
yes, I think educational theater does provide growing activities for students to meet people that have similar interests. And I hope we're providing an environment where they can feel safe to grow, which sometimes is not the point of the professional part of our market.
Right. Well, and the outside world, it doesn't exist there for you to make mistakes. I mean, in a sense they don't exist for you to learn how to be a performer. They exist to in a professional realm, and you might be very happy there, but this is another place where you're trying to care for these young students and nurture their talents and not push them too far, and all that goes into being a loving teacher.
Absolutely.
So it has to give you a great sense of pride to see this program in Kenosha so lauded, I mean, on a national level. I mean, just give us some sense, at the risk of tooting your own horn. I mean, you're tooting everybody's horn. But, I mean, it's important for people to understand that what's happening in Kenosha Unified with musical theater is something very exceptional.
Yeah, it is. But I'm going to preface that by saying it is not me.
Sure.
It is a community of people, including yourself, who teach these kids brilliantly how to sing. We have great professionals around town that give us support. We have amazing other staff in the district, Jody and Justin and Nick and Christy and Bob and Polly and John and Brad, and the list could be endless, going all the way down to their middle school and elementary teachers. So it really is a community that supports this. In my mind, this is the largest of the performance arts forms.
Hmm.
I grew up as a choir teacher. That's how I began. and love music just like all of these people. But I think what drew me to this form is its complexity. As I work with all of these things, you're working with art, you're working with music, you're working with the spoken word, you're working with so many different things. So the largeness of the form really makes a community around itself, which I think is extremely healthy. And in that sense, I think we are a model nationally, not just because we take high-quality work to the largest national festival and are recognized. We are recognized nationally for the work that we've brought there consistently. But the idea that when people talk to us about how this works, we talk about the community that it's created, since we're not bringing a specific school. Since in KUSD we work across the district to put students together from different institutions to tell stories and to try to convince them and mold them in the sense that it's about telling the story and about coming relationship to tell the story and not about an athletic paradigm which pits one school against another school against another school.
Right. And I suppose you guys, the students in the room, are in a real position to understand and appreciate that, too. That, and I suspect that we have at least two different high schools represented here.
All three.
Really?
All three.
Wow. So what does that feel like to come together with students that are from schools different than your own?
I think it's awesome, you know, because, you know, in like the sports setting, it's a rival school. But I was actually talking to this talking about this to a student I met at Carthage the other day for pre-registration and everything. I talked about how, you know, for music and theater, it's different. It's not a rivalry at all. It is much more of a community. And, you know, when I do madrigals or theater, I get to know all these people and they become like family. You know, it's there's not that, you know, constant, competitiveness. I mean, I guess there is for like parts or something, but in the end, I mean, everybody supports each other no matter what.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think, I mean, my sophomore year, I was kind of put in a weird situation where I was cast in a show that was also happening during volleyball season, and I was a varsity volleyball player my sophomore year, or I guess it was my junior year that I had to choose, now that I think about it. But when I was trying to make that decision, and it was for a small part, a tiny part. I mean, I had, like, maybe 5 minutes on stage. And so everyone thought the obvious decision was go to the volleyball team. You're varsity. You're a hitter. You're middle hitter. You also can set. You're like an asset to the team, I guess. And then what it really came down to for me was on that team, on that volleyball team, I felt like I was constantly not competing with even the other team, but also everyone on my side of the court. And I would always try to push this team mentality, but and the coaches would too, or so they would say, but in reality, they just wanted each individual to get better. But in theater, it is about the community, I think, and everyone does want to get better individually, but we do that through growing together, and we help each other, and there's not that competition there. I think, like you said, I mean, competing for parts, but it's, we all understand that there's so much complexity to fitting a part. It's not just, oh, the best person is going to get this role, and then the second best person, because
it's who's right for that part, and who's going to be the right Juliet for the Romeo, and or whatever the situation
and
is.
And so I think with theater, it's such an amazing and nurturing community and environment that I mean, I just, like, recommend it to anyone. It's awesome.
You agree, Reagan?
Yeah, I think that was well put.
I just have one quick fun moment, I think, from the fact that we have students coming from across the district. There have been years where when they do homecoming, they do their little voting shirts, you know, where everybody's got slogans. And I think there was one year where I had kids that were wearing shirts with slogans from Indian Trail, and I teach at Bradford and Tremper, so we've seen all sorts of homecoming shirts, you know, float through our cast in supporting their friends who are being a part of kind of that athletic paradigm and that school competition thing, but yet, again, in our forum, it plays so differently, and that's just really fun to watch.
It's great to see, absolutely. So we have these two productions that are going to be remounted, 1776 and West Side Story, and real quick, we don't have a ton of time, but I want you to say a word about the choice that you made to cast 1776, in a sense, what's the word, gender blind or gender neutral?
Gender,
so for instance,
gender and race neutral.
Okay, gender and race neutral, right. So for instance, Sage Holloway's playing John Hancock, and actually I think the majority of performers on the stage were women.
Yes.
Even though the characters being portrayed were mostly men.
Yes.
I was amazed at how well that worked. I was amazed at how quickly I forgot that there were women on that stage portraying men. In almost no time at all, it didn't matter because the quality of the performances was so strong. Can you just say a quick word about the challenge as director to make it work as well as it did?
Sure. The idea was actually Sherry Steinkellner's, and when we spoke last summer at the festival, she was very excited to do it. And we had just finished watching our auditions in the spring and had so many talented young women that we'd like to feature in roles that I thought it was perfect. It was a perfect fit for our students this year. Plus, given the, as Noah said, the current culture and politics, we thought it was a vibrant choice as far as the educational part of theater, a part of taking a look at how the country began and where we are now and doing all of that stuff. But, yeah, I think it resonated quite well in the gender and race blind casting. Bringing children of color into the production as well in roles that they never would have played. Obviously, we have two black young women that are playing the constituents from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, Ms. Steinkellner wanted Natalie Lall type to play the character of Rutledge. That's one thing that she specifically requested. And I knew that we had a few students that could have filled that role when we started casting, so I knew that that would work for her. I thought it was really interesting to watch how everything played. I think the audiences really did connect to it, so I think it was a fabulous choice.
It really was. Sage, real quick, what was it like to portray John Hancock?
A lot of people are surprised when I say this, but I actually, of all the roles I've ever played, it was, I don't want to say the easiest, because in many ways it wasn't, but it felt the most natural to me. Mm. And I think that's because, as much as all of the Founding Fathers are men, the most important part of them is that they're congressmen, I guess. It's the type of man that they are. So it wasn't necessarily trying to figure out how to play a dude, but, like, how to have the confidence and the, I guess you command a room, especially as John Hancock, who was president of the Congress at the time.
Right.
I sit at the top of the stage in the middle, and I have to kind of exude that confidence. And I think it was fun, honestly.
You looked like you were having fun, and you did a
yeah,
great job.
It actually felt awesome.
Right, sure. Absolutely. It was absolutely a riveting night of theater, and I'm excited to see it again, and very excited to see West Side Story. And the reason we're talking about these two productions and the reason they are being remounted is because they go to this extraordinary event in Nebraska. Real quick, Holly, describe what happens in Lincoln, Nebraska. What is this event all about?
This is the International Thespian Festival. It is the largest gathering of students and professionals and educators in the United States and Canada. It also attracts some people from other countries where educational theater is a part of their curriculum. So that's kind of what it is. It's on the campus of the University of Nebraska. They have several performance venues. West Side Story, because of the dance and the largeness of it, will be in the Leet Center, which seats about 2,400 people, and they will seat that twice. So, and it's packed. 4,800 people will see that production. The 1776 will be in the smaller venue, which is also perfect for the type of a production that is, and that seats about 1,900 to 1,000 people. So 1,800 to 2,000 people will see that production as well. And I actually just went online to get tickets because that's a more selective process since everybody in the festival cannot see that venue. And they're sold out for
wow,
both of theirs already, too.
That's cool.
Done.
And, of course, you earn the right to do that. You don't just show up. A production has to be of a certain quality. And I remember when I was privileged to go with you when you brought your production of Aida there that the electricity in the room is extraordinary because it's an audience full of people who understand what great musical theater is. Have any of you been to the event in Nebraska before?
Yes.
All three of you?
Yeah.
Great. Well, you know how exciting it's going to be. Real quick, we want to talk about a fundraising event coming up this Friday night at 7:30 called Broadway Night, and all the proceeds will help support the cost that is involved in bringing all of this, both of these productions, to Nebraska. So all three of you are going to be participating. What are you going to be singing? Let's start with you, Reagan.
I'm going to be singing Waving Through a Window from Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh,
my God.
The show that
so
everybody's talking
that.
About on Broadway right now.
Yep.
Well, that will in and of itself be worth coming for. Sage?
Sorry, I'm still shook by Reagan Beam singing Waving Through a Window. That excites me so much. I'm singing Enjoy the Trip from Bring It On, the musical. It's another gender bender, actually.
Ah, okay. you like the idea of that.
Yeah, I do.
And Noah?
And I'll be singing Reviewing the Situation from Oliver Twist.
Ah, a classic gets in there. So this is at 7:30, and it's going to be at Bradford. And so when people come, are there tickets you purchase at the door, or how does that work?
Yes, it's just our regular ticketing prices.
And so you can enjoy the many and varied talents of all kinds of different young people involved in both of these productions?
Absolutely. And the casts will each sing one moment from their shows.
Oh, great.
So that's the 1776 is going to do their opener, and West Side Steer will do the quintet, which is the moment where we all sing together.
Fantastic.
So that's a lot of fun.
Wow, no kidding. So Broadway Night will be this Friday night, 7:30 at Bradford, and then 1776 on the 14th and 15th at Indian Trails, and West Side Story the 16th and 17th at Bradford, ahead of your departure for Lincoln, which is when? When do you leave for Nebraska then?
The three staff leave on Sunday and kind of drive all day to get there and try to get things ready for the kids when they arrive, because 85 of them will arrive the next day.
Wow.
And then the kids will get on a bus sometime in the early morning hours on Monday and arrive midday on Monday.
Wow. Well, best wishes to all of you. Holly Stanfield, Noah Olson, Sage Holloway, Reagan Beam. Great to have all of you here on the morning show, and best wishes to all of you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And just for a minute or so, we're going to hear a little bit more from the Fifth House Ensemble. Again, they are currently presenting the Fresh Ink Music Festival out at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Here is a portion of a piece called Country Haze by their composer in residence, Dan Visconti. For more information on Fresh Ink, presented by the Fifth House Ensemble, you can go to freshink.org. It's 8:57 here on WGTD. At the top of the hour, we will be joining Wisconsin Public Radio, that will be bringing you NPR's live coverage of the testimony of former FBI Director James Comey before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Again, that begins at 9 o'clock. Dave McGrath will be back with an update of news today at 12 noon on midday. Tomorrow on the morning show, you'll be hearing from Dr. Greg Geyer, who is the author of a book called That's Gotta Hurt, which looks at some of the most dramatic injuries in the history of professional sports and some of the breakthroughs which have allowed athletes to come back from what once upon a time would have been career-ending injuries. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. On to our weather forecast for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois. We're going to have sunshine this morning, a few clouds rolling in this afternoon. It's going to be a warm day with a high of 79 degrees, a few degrees cooler near the lake. By tonight, it will be mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of rain, a low of 62 degrees. Partly sunny tomorrow, Friday, with a 30% chance of rain, a high of 78. And then our temperatures surge upward to 89 for a high on Saturday, 93 for a high on both Sunday and Monday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elk.